Commander of Operations Group here at the National Training Center, and I'm the host of Thinking Inside the Box. This is a podcast that Operations Group here puts on at Fort Irwin as part of the NTC's Warrior Chronicles. The Gauntlet really drives warfighting by talking to leaders from our joint force. We're talking about the crucible of ground combat, leadership, and training, and fighting here at the crown jewel of the United States Army. And today we're going to be talking a little bit about some of the frequently asked questions that brigade commanders have before they come to the National Training Center, and maybe just a quick little primer of things that brigade commanders specifically get their units prepared for. With me today, I have Colonel Michael Porges here, Bronco 07, who is the brigade team trainer. Welcome to the podcast, and thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to talking about things that brigades can do before and when they actually get here to NTC to train and win out here.
This is Mike's first podcast, and everybody is riveted to hear his perspective on what a brigade does. Now, if you're not familiar with Bronco 07 and their role, Bronco 07 really has this kind of cool role that he plays out here. Usually it's your senior 07. That senior 07 generally is the one who does most the interface with the brigade commander and the staff. So he's really the conduit for that brigade commander to speak to operations group in kind of a bigger lens. Now, he doesn't necessarily play the role of OC to the brigade commander himself, but he does play that role of allowing the brigade commander kind of a Jiminy Cricket kind of role. He sits there on his shoulder and he can whisper things and kind of ask him how the formation is doing. And we really encourage that. Mike is an expert at this role and very good at being able to be approachable and allow that commander to have a bit of a confidant to help him see the organization and see what adjustments he might need to, particularly in the thick of the fight and where it's difficult. Mike, fair assessment?
Absolutely, sir. I mean, as Bronco 07, I do get to work hand in hand with the brigade staff. And like you said, working and seeing the brigade commander each and every day. But I have not done his job. I'm not a former brigade commander like you. But, you know, I'm there for him to talk to, ask questions, bounce ideas of how I, as a battalion commander, wanted things from my brigade commander. I think that's probably one of the best things that I can do and provide to the brigade commander is just, hey, if I was one of your subordinate battalion commanders, this is what I understand from you as my boss.
You get a bulk of the real honest conversations with brigade commanders, and there's a sanctity of those conversations that I'm sure you really maintain and do a great job of being able to be that confidant for a brigade commander, but then also telling them like maybe some hard truths and being able to explain things that may not seem as rational as when you pull them out. As you meet the brigade commanders, that first introductions, I imagine there's a lot of questions, particularly kind of breaks up between both scenario, like how are things going to go and how will I get observations? What kind of questions do you get on scenarios, for example?
Well, you know, we create and establish our lines of communication, our relationship with the RTU as early as LTP, and we reach out to them even before they show up here. But you know, what I have seen from brigade commanders are they are interested in what the scenario looks like. But more importantly, they're wanting to know how they can get after certain warfighting functions prior to their arrival back here and execution of RSOI. And when they actually come here to execute RSOI prior to them crossing LD in execution on force, they really want to know, are they able to, by warfighting function, get the job done? Are they able to communicate? How can they best communicate? Not only through systems and the processes, but how do they actually, in commander speak, deliver the message to their staff and deliver the message to their subordinate battalions and squadron? Because at the end of the day, brigade commanders are ready to get after it. They want to come here and win. They know that this rotation is a reflection of their leadership. So they are desirable of how can we be successful in the eyes of the OCs. At the end of the day, also their senior trainer.
The most primary of primary training audiences out here, I think, is that brigade commander. Particularly challenging is the fact that he, she will never have trained a brigade before, will never have fought as a brigade combat team, and they'll only do it out here. So this is the first time they're seeing some of these systems work. What's interesting is there's all these systems that are interdependent, all these gears turning that you will never see until you get everybody out there, and all of a sudden you're like, wow, I didn't realize that particular thing had as much of an impact. I know we're kind of speaking in generalities here. I want to dig into two different things. Number one, exercise design. Concerns that brigade commanders have, particularly as we're changing a lot very quickly here at National Training Center. I want to address some of those concerns that brigade commanders have brought up. And then also in real tangible ways, I'd like to be able to offer what things we think brigade commanders can do in order to get a running start as they move out into the box. Because certainly it is an intense 14 days. Any way you cut it. I would even argue that's just the training days. You are engaged from the day you start uploading trains on out. So first off, exercise design. What concerns do you generally hear from brigade commanders about the exercise design?
Yes, sir. So specific to exercise design, I mean, they are, first of all, interested in east to west, but really, like, what are their assigned tasks going to be? Because they see an order that, hey, I'm going to attack to seize this objective, and then I'm going to transition to hasty defense, and these are going to be my limits of advance, etc. So they are really interested to know what is the tactical task and the end state for their BCT during each phase of the operation. And now as we transition, sir, to the open phasing, they are starting to be really interested to figure out what do transitions look like between what would originally be phase two Alpha to phase two Bravo to Charlie, et cetera. They are now really interested to know what can they do to be successful at transitions. Because as we execute transitions, which in the past we did the suspension of battlefield effects, SOBEs, which is no longer a thing here, sir, but those transitions where we would normally have, you know, 8 to 10 hours to take off our gear, some people would be taking naps, we'd be doing AARs, et cetera. We're still in contact now as we execute these transitions. And so these are big questions that the staffs and the commander have well before coming back here to NTC. So I think them thinking about how they can keep the pressure on Black Horse, how they can maintain tempo and momentum within the parameters of your higher headquarters, you can still execute missions and you can still be in contact with Black Horse, but this is your limited advance. This is the boundary to your north. So you can't go there. You can't go past this because you are going to desynchronize the division operation. To answer your question, sir, again, on exercise design, commanders are most interested in how, in the absence of SOBE, in the absence of clear phasing of operations, what do they need to do to be successful as part of a division fight?
So you pulled out three topics I really want to hit, and I concur. You talked about open phasing, you talked about the different kind of mission sets, and you talked about fighting as a brigade, fighting as a component of a division. Those are the three areas that I think are the primary concern when a brigade thinks about what am I going to be expected to do out here. First off, what I like to tell brigade commanders is do at NTC that which you can only do at NTC, and that is fight as a brigade combat team. And when we fight as a brigade combat team, we have mission essential tasks. We know what they are. So generally, you can expect to do an attack, a defense, a movement to contact. You could expect to train those elements. We talked about open phasing, and open phasing has been a source of some confusion, a source of concern. And bottom line, I think we've kind of made it something more confusing than it needs to be. It is simply there's no timeout. So again, separation of forces being a challenge, how do we do that a way that is smooth and does not disrupt the integrity of the battlefield? The other component that's been difficult for us is trying to facilitate the after-action review process. And for NTC, that's kind of the coin of the realm. That's what we do. And now, to a degree, we're having to shoehorn that into various different times. What are your thoughts on some of the challenges we've had trying to enable open phasing, but at the same time achieve some of those other separation of forces and AAR timelines?
I believe it's the most important thing that we do as operations group, provide a world-class AAR. We can't not do AARs. With that in mind, sir, we are working right now as operations group to try to make it seamless, really impossible to do, to say, hey, we're going to pull leaders out of your formation to do AARs while you are still in contact with the enemy. We realize at some level, desynchronize what you want to do as a platoon, as a company battery troop, as a squadron battalion, whatever it may be, pulling leaders is the biggest challenge. So what we want to do is really maybe, hey, we don't do all AARs during this 6-hour period. We are going to find the time that is really nested with the brigade's timeline to pull squadron leaders out of the formation so we can make sure that troop commanders and first sergeants are a part of that high quality AAR. We might have Battalion A out with their leaders for an AAR, but the rest of the battalions are going to still be in the fight. At the end of the day, back to one of the basic things we do with regards to priorities of work, and you establish security, right? You need to be able to secure your formation and be in a position to protect yourself from forms of contact with the enemy. So like figuring out, hey, once you get to that point and working with your higher headquarters to understand, hey, you're going to be out of the fight for a little bit for these AARs. They need to rely maybe on a different battalion, but we are working tirelessly with the RTU to make sure that we can still give them that high quality AAR and that they are still nested with the brigade's plan as they fight during this open phasing.
Two pieces of training proficiency that we are really now able to get at a little bit more precisely is a brigade has to make its own assessment now on consolidation, reorganization. At what point do we need to transition? And it's not, hey, survive till the bell rings. It's now communication. And that kind of lends itself to the second part of that, which is you're finding the brigade as part of a division. And so some of the things you talked about with how do we incorporate some of these, what may seem artificial requirements from the outside, into the scenario without disrupting the commander's ability to make those bold decisions. And a lot of that comes to finding a brigade as part of a division. Division's going to give us constraints very reasonably. I like to look back at my experience as brigade commander, both as a brigade commander fighting a warfighter, which is part of the division, and then as a brigade commander fighting here out at National Training Center. And I think a lot of times when we focus just on the brigade at National Training Center, I was much more internally focused on what my brigade was doing. And it was almost that the division was a bit of just kind of a left and right guide. When I fought at the warfighter, very much the opposite. We were focused 90% up and out, just how do we communicate to the division what we're doing, where we're doing, how do we acknowledge the tasks that are given us to the division. So really, there's a sweet spot somewhere in there that we're trying to get to. A division has responsibilities that it must provide for the brigade. A brigade should not be as concerned with counterfire. There's a division that'll provide that counterfire for them. A brigade now has intel capability resident with division that needs to provide the PED support that they no longer have organic to their formation. What have you seen now with brigade commanders and how are they thinking about their interactions with division now with a little bit more of a division footprint, more constraints placed on that? Do you see brigade commanders reacting to that?
My 18 months that I've been here, I've seen us continue to improve how we as operations group provide a higher headquarters that is more capable of being a division headquarters for subordinate brigades. And the brigade commanders really are interested in what are adjacent units doing, most likely in the virtual and constructive environment, but they are wondering how their piece of the pie is a part of the bigger division plan. Establish security, establish your hasty defense, and then get into your MDMP, your cycles of targeting of MDMP, where then you can then be better prepared and postured to LD than at a time where the warrior division is going to be executing the next phase of the operation. Now, we also recently had more and more division, actual divisions, the higher headquarters right. from the RTU come right. here. And so we're working with them. The team we have here on our 52ID staff is really working to be nested with a senior trainer and his or her division staffs that come as part of packages to help train their BCTs that are here as RTU. So working hard with them, you know, sometimes the brigade commanders are wondering what 52ID wants compared to what does their actual home station division headquarters that has sent out a TAC that has one of their GOs here, et cetera. So we're still working through that, sir. We see different packages, sizes, and personnel that come here in support of the RTU. But I think at the end of the day, we're giving the brigades a lot better of a training environment where they are a part of a division fight. Still plenty of work to be done to make this truly a better division fight here at NTC.
One of the things I think you do expertly, you don't pretend to be a brigade commander. You don't pretend to have done their job. You're just that conduit and that lens through which they can see their formations. And you provide that very honest feedback and candor that a brigade commander would really appreciate and really needs to be able to see their formation, but then also to see where they are in time and space. You know, what I encourage brigade commanders, when you're talking with Bronco 07, you know, he is the one that you can say, hey, how well did we really accomplish that mission? And he can give you the basic facts. You know, sometimes it's the cold, hard calculus of combat is just what you killed and what killed you. And we can absolutely give you that feedback. And there are these metrics that make success on the battlefield a very tangible thing, particularly for a brigade. Have you found brigade commanders been willing to engage you on how can I really see myself?
Absolutely, sir. I mean, I more than anyone want to see the BCTs be successful, but not necessarily at the expense of learning some tough lessons. When brigade commanders come to me, they want to know truly, are they successful? Then I would say the most interesting thing that brigade commanders have really asked for is how effective is their communication? And this is specific to leader, commander dialogue. Am I able to communicate to my battalion commanders, the squadron commanders, where they understand my intent? They also want to know, is their staff understanding what's in their head? Is the staff nested with what I as a commander want them and expect them to do? So that is the best candid feedback I can give them is like, hey, sir, just so you know, two battalion commanders in battalion X and Y, they think that their tactical task is this, not what you and your staff has just been talking about. I'm just trying to help him see his formation and be a more effective commander in communicating to his force.
Yep. Like what we talk about, you know, how you communicate. One of the things that I talk at LTP with commanders about is learning how you communicate with your staff and how you communicate to your other commanders and how you iteratively communicate is something you have to develop at home station with the things you're doing. I know these things all seem really simple, but what I really recommend is a very sophisticated how we fight series of LPDs. Everyone has and how we fight. But let me kind of explain what I think that means. It kind of goes back to a thought. One of these platitudes you often hear is a simple plan violently executed. And I thought about that a lot. As I'm watching football, I'm realizing, you know, for the most part, every play that a team executes is relatively simple. It's within the boundaries. We know what the boundaries are. The division has told us, here is your left and right, here's your constraints. All of that is kind of laid out for us. We execute a simple plan. It's, you know, it's a pass. It's going left, it's going right, it's up the middle. On the surface, you look at that and you say, that's a very simple plan. But make no mistake that every one of those players knows I am blocking this direction, and they all have this play worked down. And so I was really thinking hard on the difference between a play versus a plan. And you mentioned SOPs earlier. I recommend that those how we fight LPDs or that series of events, if you can make that as expansive as you can to really explore the space of plays, working out how you will fight as a brigade. And then everyone down at echelon defining some of these things, that when you know, when you run an option right, option left, this is what each of the player is going to do as a start point. And it doesn't constrain a player because the defense is going to array their defense and it's going to cause an audible. But all those things are built into how we fight. And as you do these how we fight professional development sessions, what they really need to be is not just sitting there and saying, how might we do this? Really explore the space with the tools you have. Explore the space with just map exercises, tabletop exercises. But the more that a subordinate commanders can hear how you articulate intent, and the more that staff can figure out how they insert themselves into that process, the better. We have talked a lot about fundamentals and communication of commander kind of being one of these fundamentals that we were trying to explore a little bit about how can we give simple guidance relative to commander's level communication. We talked about risk, and so much of when we highlight risk, we associate it with hazards and we associate it with something you try to avoid. Really getting commanders and their staffs to look at risk as something that is more akin to the gambler's role, and a staff that can articulate and help the commander see, here's the risk, here is the reward in their staff estimates. That is critical, because I think oftentimes we say, hey, that's the language of commanders. That's all of our language. Everything we do is, it's fundamentally a risk assessment. Make bold decisions, do a bold maneuver. We need to be able to celebrate when commanders make that estimate, they knew what it was, and they had a contingency. Well, if it doesn't work, then this is where I'll be. From your perspective in the Bronco team watching brigade staffs, what's sort of the evolution of the staff as you've seen them here, and what are some nuggets you can give out to brigade commanders or any brigade staffers that might be listening for how they can prepare to communicate with commanders?
It does go back to the risk versus reward. How the staffs evolve from day one to day 14, originally they are focused more on risk. And commanders are also the same way. This is the risk that I'm taking. And over time, we coach, and we also just see the natural evolution of commanders taking the opportunity to be successful, as you said, sir, to execute something violently and just to really exploit that opportunity, seize that key piece of terrain earlier than what the division was expecting you to do. But then you have to then weigh risk versus reward and communicate with other commanders, you know, namely your boss, but then also subordinate commanders, so they know what is the next step and how can they posture themselves to be ready for when you say go.
One of the things that we endeavor to do when we're replicating the division here is to ensure that we're not creating artificial friction and we're not creating situations whereby we are trying to test a brigade or a brigade staff, brigade commander to, well, if you ask for this, then you will get this and enables new options. I think really important that brigade commanders come in here and the staff understand there aren't the games like that. So what I really want them to see is we've got a brigade division that's going to give you basically the minimum constraints necessary, the minimum guidance necessary for you to execute the mission. It's going to give you what you need to be able to identify opportunities and seize the initiative. And that is just really going to be a function of the seeing yourself, see the enemy, see the terrain. Like you and I have talked about this, we try to eliminate any of these opportunities to kind of game your scenario. Just do the fundamentals, do them well. If you're asked to defend, defend really well. I want to explore a little bit more of the simple plans. My assessment is that simple plans sometimes is seen as a heuristic to shortcut planning or to shortcut really your staff estimate and be able to excuse, well, I don't have this in my staff estimate. You also see that often when you hear people talk about doing decision point tactics. What are your thoughts when you hear that, like a simple plan? What are your thoughts on that from a brigade staff perspective?
We've seen a wide range of levels of proficiency. And now you could say, well, hey, this unit was good at this and that. But at the end of the day, it goes back to at whatever level of training you did at home station, did you get your playbook right? Do your platoons know how to execute an attack? Do your companies and troops know how to execute a movement to contact? Whatever it may be, like when you get here and you have a playbook, you have your SOPs that are defined, that are known, that are, you know, rehearsed at home station, completed, then you come here with an ability to put commanders in positions to do those decision point tactics, where the commander knows that his team at certain levels are proficient at executing whatever are on their METs. And therefore, commanders then are more comfortable making decision point tactics, decisions in the execution of whatever assigned tasks that 52ID gives to the BCT. So I know I talked more at the lower levels, but that really applies also at the BCT level with its subordinates, battalions, and squadrons.
Again, a simple plan when executing decision point tactics, it's still predicated on the idea that the staff is, number one, able to look in depth, in time, space, and purpose on the battlefield and anticipate where those decisions may come. It's also predicated on the idea that once we see those decisions, we have the tactical knowledge to know how we'd achieve a position of advantage in each of those situations. We have the opportunity now. It's going to be a time window where we can do this or do that. How would you react? And seeing those decisions and then articulating those in a timely manner for the commander. I mean, staffs often see themselves as sort of trailing this commander, but in so many ways, they need to enable their commanders to see options, to see those things. To me, a good staff is that hive brain, just providing just that little nugget or that little niche perspective to be able to see it.
On that same note, though, sir, I mean, yes, the staff needs to be, you know, as much as they can in the head of the commander, but the commander also needs to be accessible. He needs to also take from the staffs and ask for the staffs and give guidance to the staff. Staffs can't always be ahead of the commander, but the commander owes it to them also. Not just the staffs owing it to the commander. The commander needs to be involved.
So it's a really interesting topic. A lot of times we have seen a lot of different sort of perspectives on engagement with commanders versus engagement with staff in the planning process. I've been reading over this Blockley a lot about General Washington and his generals. And just a common practice, even across the armies at the time, was to have war councils. In essence, there wasn't this robust staff, but you would call in subordinate generals and conduct a war council prior to major engagements, in a sense, almost a go, no-go brief. We see that today when we see units pulling in subordinate commanders at definitive times where they can achieve the most situational understanding and help the commander see the battlefield. You see that immediately following mission analysis and prior to development of directed courses of action, a lot of times at different levels. Have you seen a lot of this kind of left and right, or try to figure out what is the right amount of time to spend with their staff versus their subordinate commanders?
I've seen, again, a wide variety of commanders that interact more with commanders and commanders that interact with the staff. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think the best ones have a balance. The staffs are the ones that are the brain power of the formation. They're making sure that things in the rear are getting pushed forward, that we are properly balancing the amount of D7 dozers, all these CCLs, class 4 that is getting positioned. Your staff's doing all this stuff while your commander's out there talking to other commanders, talking about how he visualizes the next phase or how we're going to execute this mission. So how is the conversations that commanders are having with other commanders getting back to the staff that's going to put the brain power together to make that come to fruition? If the conversations they're having out there, they don't have a corporal out there, they don't have an adjutant or whoever taking notes and sending it back, then they're going to be continuing to outpace their staff.
So as we finish this out, I kind of want to get some quick hits from you. We talk about, you see a brigade in flow. Like every once in a while, it's like, wow, this brigade is just in flow. Like things are just happening. They're fighting as a brigade combat team. And like you hear this great communication, you hear decisions being presented. So cool to see. But it's always a little bit tempered. It fits and starts to a degree. Sometimes they're able to extend that a little bit more. So when you think about a brigade in flow, I'm going to give you a part of the ops process, and you tell me a brigade in flow is doing what? Okay, plan.
They are thinking about the next phase of the operation. Like they have a planner that is dedicated to think through, to drive and help manage the ops process so the commander can come in, give a touch point, and the commander can drive that ops process. But there is a planner that is helping think about what's next for the brigade.
Prepare.
We have a staff that comes together across all warfighting functions to do MDMP, to make sure that we are talking about the conditions that must be set. We have criteria. We have defined these criteria. And so we know when we wake up in the morning to do our final conditions check that all the subordinates have executed, have checked the block, and we have the men resources required to execute the mission that you as the brigade commander are telling me as a battalion to do.
Execute.
We, again, have set the conditions. We can see ourselves. We know that everything we thought in the plan and prepare portion, that this was critical for us to execute this mission. Yes, we have done it. We have resourced our subordinates appropriately. We have all our warfighting functions in position ready to. We are now ready to execute with all conditions set, and we are in a position where commanders can command and control their formation.
Finally, assess.
So this one is really hard because we often struggle to assess our effectiveness of where we stand and seeing ourselves with our regard as a blue force. You're telling me to continue on, but I don't understand. I don't assess what that last 12 hours, 24 hours did to my formation. So we just need to have a good reporting mechanism. We have to have the systems in place to understand where we are as a team, and therefore at the end of the day, come together and be able to assess our current situation and prepare for what's next.
I really enjoyed this and really want to encourage brigade commanders, brigade staff, please reach out. We've been really working on trying to pinpoint some fundamentals that if I'm a brigade and I'm coming here, you know, what are these going to do? What I'd offer, I really think of like the fundamentals of planning. You just have to have a process that your brigade uses that should address how you're incorporating your commanders and staff. And you should have products that you say, these are the fighting products that we will use. These are the expectations you can have on what we will produce at a minimum. When it comes to prepare, I think of a brigade should have a clear understanding across its formation of, like you said, what does it mean to be in position ready to by warfighting function? And then very clear understanding of what are your pre-combat checks. And you have to have exercised mm-hmm. them in a training environment. When it comes to execute, I think we have seen so many times platoons and companies that are lethal will save the fight. And so hit what you are aiming at, and the platoon leaders that can execute battle drills, just the battle drills that are laid out very simply. Hey, let's just get really good at doing these things, whatever we're doing. And then finally, when you talk about assess, commanders being able to really configure their command posts to enable decisions, real-time decision, to enable that dynamic decision-making that's relevant to the speed of the fight. You got a staff in that command post that's listening to the commander and seeing the decisions that he's making and seeing the decisions he's considering, and then redefining what that PIR, FFIR in real time are, and then putting out those reporting requirements to the formation and getting that information. Mike, it's been awesome talking to you. I really appreciate it. You are very much accessible to brigade commanders now, right?
Yes, sir. We are here to help train the force. So however we can help anyone that's listening, absolutely the Bronco team wants to hear from people.
We say this to every team, and nobody ever takes us up on it. So I challenge any listener out there to really call and get a hold of your critter teams, ask them for their feedback. Mike, it's been awesome talking to you. Thank you so much for your time and your insights. Congratulations on your recent promotion. I invite our listeners to look into our latest podcasts. You can subscribe to our TAC Talks. They're on YouTube for the really quick hitting lessons. Thanks for listening to Thinking Inside the Box, The Gauntlet, brought to you by the Warrior Chronicles here at the National Warfighting Training Center. Train the force, lead, train, and win.